Hello and welcome to this, the second of our Australian Baseball League preview podcasts here at Batflips and Nerds. For those of you who missed it in midweek, we had an awesome conversation with the Sydney Blue Sox new manager, Tony Harris. This is the second of our much previewed podcasts with Travis Blackley, the former Oakland Athletics, Seattle Mariners, San Francisco Giants, Texas Rangers and Houston Astros and current Brisbane Bandits pitcher. Now, Travis has taken to the mound already this year. I'm pre-recording this earlier in the week, so I can't tell you whether he won or lost, but what we can definitely say, he's one of the blue chip players in this year's ABL with a very storied and really excellent career in both MLB, as I've mentioned, and in the KBO and the NPB over in Japan too. He's a really, really cracking bloke, as I'm sure you'll be able to tell right from the outset of this interview. He's got some fascinating stories. He's a very, very candid guy. Look forward to hearing your feedback on this one. Again, thanks very much to our friend Cam McHarg for helping set this up. Take it away, Travis Blackley. Our second guest for our 2017 ABL preview is a man who was a top 100 prospect and who has appeared for five MLB clubs across a 12-year career that includes spells in the Korean Baseball Organization with the Kia Tigers and with MPB's Rakuten Golden Eagles, and most recently with the Mexican Baseball League's Pericos de Puebla and the Pittsburgh Diamonds of the Pacific Association. He's spending this year, as he has the last 2 years, in the ABL with the Brisbane Bandits. Good morning, Travis Blackley. How are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you going?
Not too bad, mate. Thanks very much for taking time to speak to us.
Yeah, you're more welcome, mate. Happy to be here.
Great, thanks. So before we get into the ABL, it would be good to just ask a few general questions about your career whilst we've got you on the line. So to start with, I was interested to find out how you got into baseball, because it's more of a sport over in Oz than it is here in the UK, but it's I guess, a sort of distant fifth behind the two footballs, the two rugbies and cricket, maybe sixth even. So how come you ended up as a baseball guy rather than a cricket guy or a footy guy?
You know what? I my younger brother, he started playing t-ball. I was actually a swimmer. To start my early years, I was a swimmer, and my younger brother started playing t-ball, but I was too old to play t-ball, so I had to play baseball. And it was just that first sport that I wasn't very good at straight away. You know, like, I played football, I played cricket. Not saying I was the best at those. I always picked it up really, really quickly. And this was one sport that really just, it was something I was pretty, pretty average at to start. So it kind of, like, you know, my competitiveness took over, and that's why I wanted to keep playing it.
So how long was it before you managed to get any good at it then? How long did you stick at it before you realised you had a bit of talent?
Wow, well, I mean, the difference between me thinking I had talent and actually having talent, I would say, I grew a love for the game. So, like, whether I was, you know, I had good games and I had bad games, and I think, you know, even if I wasn't very good, I'd have a good game every now and again, which would, like, remind me that, hey, I could become pretty decent at this one day. You know, my whole entire junior career, I tried out for every team I could, every state team, and I never made one. I always got cut right at the end of the training, and I finally made it my very last attempt in my second year under 18 when I was 17 years old. So I made that team, and that's when, like, the whole roller coaster started. You know, I went from nobody hearing about me to doing well for my home state of Victoria, and we won the Australian Championship, and then getting selected in the Australian team and going to Canada, and then doing really well in that, and getting seen by a bunch of scouts, and then by the end of that tournament being signed by the Seattle Mariners. I mean, 4 months after that, I was pitching in America. So It was crazy. It was a crazy 8 or 9 month period where I just went from nothing to signed. And
that does sound absolutely bonkers, to be honest. Like, going from, you know, thinking I'm all right at this, but am I any good? And you know, 9 months later, you're a professional. It must have been a a bit upside down for you. I was going to ask you, because you're a pretty young guy when you moved over to the States. So how did you find the transition away from Oz to the frozen northwest of the States?
Well, you know, I mean, my first part of the time there, I was in Arizona for spring training. So I spent the spring there, was quite nice, you know, quite warm, not over the top. But then the extended spring training, when all the rookie ball and young, like, A-ball guys, they stay there through till about middle of June. And let me tell you, Arizona in middle of June is not somewhere you want to be. It is like 45 degrees every day. And hot as it just, and but then after that, I did go up to the Pacific Northwest to their short season A team called the Everett Aqua Sox, and that was a cool experience because it was finally playing in front of fans. And whereas in Arizona, it's so hot, they play early in the morning. It's out on the backfields. It's there's no one watching really, except for some scouts and like your teammates. So yeah, it was. It was kind of crazy, you know, just to be no one knew who I was. And then honestly, within actually 4 years, I was pitching at the highest level. So I went from nothing to, you know, I really shot through the minor leagues and then was pitching in the big leagues by the 2004 season. And I just signed in 2001. So it was pretty crazy.
So what was it that you think sort of made you go through the levels that quickly then? Was there anything particularly that guys gave you feedback in terms of, was it your makeup, was it the pitches that you had?
Honestly, I think it was a combination of things. I think I had one pitch that was, honestly, I didn't even know how I threw it, and I can't even throw it anymore. I hurt myself throwing it. It was a version of a change-up or a slower ball in cricket that I melted the leg spin style into my throw, so a bent arm leg spin. If you can imagine, I'm basically turning my hand over, which you're not supposed to do, but I was getting the action of a right-handed curveball. And so I had two pitches. I had my curveball that would sweep in behind the right-hander's leg, and then I had the changeup, which would sweep down and away from the hitter. And so it was just that pitch there. I could throw it in any count, and I didn't know how I did it. I literally looked at the catcher's chin and threw it as hard as I could, and it would just do it. And when I blew my shoulder out, throwing, you know, obviously I threw too many of those, that's when I came back from rehabbing that, it was very hard to turn my shoulder over like that, and I had to relearn how to throw that pitch. And it's obviously not as a devastating pitch as it used to be, but, I figured, so I had that, and then I think I just had this, like, desire to prove that, you know, this kid from Australia can hang with the American guys. You know, I remember my first spring training, and I was the youngest on my first team, but I was playing against college kids, but it was my first time facing guys with metal, with wooden bats. I'd been facing all these kids with metal bats, and all these men in Australia with metal bats, and I think when I finally started to face wooden bats, I was not scared of anybody. I knew if I just made my pitches, I could break them off. And I think this that confidence led to this, like, no fear kind of attitude. And then this, you know, coupled with that desire to kind of prove myself, just made me kind of ridiculous at the time. I don't know how to explain it, man. But it's definitely easier when you're younger and you're oblivious to the politics and you know, what kind of goes on behind the scenes. And as you get older and you see how moves are made and stuff, you just really, you can place yourself in those situations and realize, like, what move might be coming up for you. And I kind of wish I was still dumb to that fact, and it would have been much easier to stay. But yeah.
stay resilient all the time if you were 22 years old.
Oh, tell me about it.
I haven't had a problem with the body. You played for a few teams, but I think people probably remember you best for that spell you had in Oakland in 2012, where yet another amazing Billy Beane team raced to the playoffs. So what were your memories of that Oakland team? That must have been a pretty special experience.
No, I don't think I'll ever forget that team. That was the most fun I've ever had playing baseball. That year in 2012... it was probably the best year of my life. I met my wife that year, or I found my wife that year, but I I just, everything changed. I came back from Korea from the year before, and I found a new kind of style when I came from Korea. I was throwing harder. I was a different style of pitcher. And when I came to America, I just started striking out a lot of guys again. And I got called up because of it, and to the Giants, actually. And then when their guy came back off the DL, that I got was the odd man out, and they had to go on waivers, and then the A's claimed me. And I had the manager that I had, Bob Melvin, was the same manager I had with my debut with the Mariners in 2004. So we had history, and I actually didn't think he liked me much. And he even told me straight up that, you know what, you're probably not going to stick around here. We just kind of picked you up to fill our AAA squad. But that's not to say that it's going to happen. You can still obviously earn a spot. While you're here, if you get the opportunity, you know, do what you can. But I went out there and I really killed it, man, and did great out of the bullpen. And then they needed a starter on short notice, and that was my go-to. So when I got that start and threw down a really good game for them, I stayed there for 10 starts. And then it started going back and forth. You know, a guy would come off the DL and I'd be moved back to the pen. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, a guy gets drug ban or something, so I got to pitch in his spot. Then they call up a guy from AAA because they want to try him out. I get sent back to the bullpen. Then a guy gets a line drive hit off his head and ends up missing the rest of the season, so I get his spot for the rest of the way out. So it was just one of those things, but when it came down to it, I found myself pitching for the, you know, the second last game of the year when it was a must win to, if we wanted a chance to win the division. And it was against the Texas Rangers, and they had literally just smashed me the week before. In one inning, I gave up 5 runs, and I had the media on my back the whole week going, what are you going to do different? But the whole time I kept hearing in these interviews with Melvin was saying, you know, listen, we're going with Blackley. We trust him. He's done it for us all year. And that just reinforced my confidence, and went out there and threw one of the biggest games I ever threw. And yeah, unfortunately, that was the last game I ever threw for the Oakland A's. But really, that was a fun year, and man, it came to an end. Just unfortunately, Justin Verlander and the Detroit Tigers ended our run there in the first round of the playoffs in the last game, final deciding game. So yeah, but little lucky for me, the Giants went on to win the World Series, and because I was a member of the Giants, I was able to pick up a World Series ring. So pretty happy about that.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. So that was a pretty nice consolation prize. So it was sticking in San Francisco. And I noticed looking back on your career, you seem to like the Bay Area.
I love the Bay Area. That's my favorite part of America. San Francisco is my favorite city. It reminds me of Melbourne, where I'm from. It has a very Melbourne feel, very like the vibe of it. For an American city, it's a lot like it. And the weather is also a lot like Melbourne. You know, cool in the winter, but not snowing, and hot in the summer. Well, at least hot, at least when you get east of the Oakland Hills, where I don't live in San Francisco, I live out east of it. But it's quite hot, like around the mid to upper 30s in the summer. So, yeah, it's good. And there's not, it never rains. It never rains in the summer, which is great. But
and you got to pitch in the big games and got the World Series ring there.
Yeah, you know, every now and it's funny, you know, I walk around, it doesn't happen very often, but every now and again, that hardcore Oakland A's fan will just happen to run across, come across you in public and go, oh my God, are you, you get recognized and get a photo with somebody. It's, you know, I don't think I could handle that so much being like, if I was like a superstar, that would be tough, I think, you know, just, I never, don't have that kind of personality, but it's kind of cool when it happens every now and again. It's fun, you know, but
yeah, I bet. I wanted to talk about another couple of baseball cultures actually that you sampled that are really intriguing, which you mentioned earlier that you played in 2011 in Korea, and you also spent a year in Japan as well. Now they're noted for being like incredible in terms of their love of baseball in both of those countries. What were your experiences like in Korea and Japan?
Wow, Korea was really cool. In fact, I loved Korea. I'd love to go back to Korea. It's that's actually my goal right now, is to pitch well here in Brisbane, and hopefully something in Korea could open up. If I had to go via Taiwan to be seen by a Korean scout again, then that would be fine by me. But we went back there for the WBC warm-ups this year, and I missed it. It was really fun. The Korean fans are some of my favorites I've come across. They love their players. They love the teams, just like Japan, but I feel like they get into it even more. I don't know how to explain it. When I played there in 2011, I was a pretty easy to recognize guy in Korea. I was in one of the biggest cities in Korea called Gwangju, and I was covered in tattoos. I had a couple of piercings in my face. I was pretty recognizable. Let's just say if I went to the mall, as soon as I got recognized, it was an hour long photo session, because you just couldn't get away. I didn't very much. So after the first half, I didn't really venture out too much in my home city. When I was in Seoul, it was easier because it's such a big city, you could get around it. But Japan, not so much. Like maybe if I had been with a team who had a bigger fan base, or if I had been with a team that actually used me, I didn't get a whole lot of time in the big leagues over there. That we were struggling with the hitting, and they signed a bunch of hitters that year, and it seemed no matter how well I threw in their minor leagues, they just never called me up. And I still don't quite know the reason, but I was smashing the minor league there and didn't belong there, and I just didn't seem to get out of there. So it was a frustrating year for me, and it kind of, at the end, ruined the rest of my career, because trying to come back to America the next season, nobody knew what I'd done. Nobody, where did you play last year? Oh, we see you have 3 games in Japan. I'm like, I have a whole lot more than 3 games, but just not in the major leagues. And they couldn't, couldn't find my stats and that. But the fans and the atmosphere in Japan and Korea is just bananas, mate. Like, it's packed houses every night. Just loud, especially in the domes. It's really loud. Really, they love it. I think America gets loud with the home run, and most of the time it's just kind of, I think because there's 162 games a year, the fans just like, unless it's something like exceptional on the field, they're just not really prone to really cheer. But Japan cheer for everything. I mean, a pop-up to center field, a pop-up off the bat, everyone's gone ballistic, like it's got a home run, and then the guy catches it nowhere near the fence. And then Mexico is even a more unique experience, because they're pretty fanatic as well, but they have different like groups of bands that are just, they bring their tubas and their drums and their trombones and trumpets and guitars, and there'll be like a group.
Mariachi bands in the stadium.
Yeah, kind of, but more than one, and all in different areas of the stadium. So, like, maybe one behind left field fence, one behind first base, one behind between third base and the left field corner, and they're all just playing their own stuff along so every now and again, you can, if the crowd quiets down enough, you can hear 3 different songs going on at once. It's, it's pretty crazy, and they're pretty wild, too.
Sounds mad.
Yeah, they're pretty wild. If you're on the road, on the road team, I've had batteries thrown at me. I've had I had an apple hurled at me while I was on the mound. There's a one stadium now; it's not there anymore. But you used to have to literally walk in under the first base bleacher, and your dugout was right there. And as I'm walking in, the guy dumps his entire beer all over me, like. It's wild, man. They don't hold back and they don't care. So it's cool, and they do it when you upset them because you're smashing them, and maybe you get into an altercation with another teammate or a guy on the other team, and they obviously take the side of their guy, and then it's on anyone's free game. So it's cool, man. I like it. That really. They're very passionate, very, very passionate in the Latin countries, in Mexico, especially because they're not really held in the same regards as like Dominican or Venezuela when they really should be. They have a great pedigree there, and they have, like, every year I've played in Mexico in the Winter League, it seemed to have won the Caribbean Series against all the other teams. So it's quite a strong league, and people don't rate it as high as it should be.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, that, really, particularly when you get some players coming out of there. I mean, Velasquez went into the Red Sox organization last year, and he didn't look out of place. I mean, it's crazy that more players like that aren't making that transition.
Oh, I know. He chopped it up, man. He was so good in the Winter League, and he was in the Summer League with me the year before that. And I always thought that guy was pretty special, and I couldn't believe he hadn't been put out there. But yeah, I mean, just the guys that have come out of there, the Gonzaleses, you know, Adrian Gonzalez, or Vinny Castilla, you know, Rubio Daraza, and Humberto Cota, obviously Valenzuela. Like there's, and then you've got some more that are American Mexican, but you know, like they also claim Mexico as home, you know, Sergio Romo, there's heaps, their Mexican WBC team is stacked. Not that we didn't smash him in 2009, but that was a pretty crazy game. Yeah.
So I was working it out. If you sort of count Mexico as sort of Southern America, which is taking a few liberties, and Antarctica obviously would be pretty difficult to play baseball on. The only continent where you haven't played baseball is actually Europe. So how about joining Ryan Searle in Italy next year if Korea doesn't work out?
Well, you know, that's obviously something that might. But you know, I've kind of it's popped its head up a few times in the last few years. Like, I guess. Not an actual opportunity sent to me, but like interest to go out there has been offered to me, but I haven't had anyone say, listen, here, we're going to offer you this to come out and play. But my younger brother once played in Amsterdam and he loved it. I happen to know and was teammates with a seven footer from the Netherlands named Luc Van Mil. I'm sure he could help me out somewhere there.
Yeah, I know him, yeah.
Yeah, so, and also, yeah, I mean, Italy or the Netherlands, the Dutch League, that'd be fun. I have friends that have played in all of them, the Czech League, the German League. So, yeah, it's maybe something, but, I mean, that's kind of like going to cost me money to go there when you got the family and you want them to join you. It's more... if you want to get a almost free holiday. But whereas Asia, actually, you will pay.
Yeah, it's not quite the same when you're having to pay to go and play baseball. Yeah, you can eat some pretty good pizza in Italy. I can tell you that for nothing.
Oh, I bet. I actually have never been to Europe. I was going to go to Greece for the 2004 Olympics, and then I got called up 10 days before the team left. And funny enough, they went on and won the silver medal. So I'm like the only guy that didn't get one. That was, you know, going to be there. So that's why I'm really trying to keep my... I want to experience the Olympics, and that will be something that I want to check off my list before I hang them up. And that's so that's what I'm setting my sights on these days. And Australia, thankfully, we've been playing really well and managed to secure, at the moment, I think, seventh in the world. So we have a tiny bit of breathing room. I guess they're going to take the top eight teams to the Olympics. So we just need to, I'll make myself available for anything Australia's baseball team has to do to help us get there. Cause that's just, that's something that I've always wanted to do and been always thought about as being something that I've been sad about missing out on, even though I got to experience my first ever chance in the big leagues. And who's to say I would have ever got a chance if I didn't take that one? So, yeah, just I'd love to have a crack at it.
Bittersweet.
Bittersweet, yeah. I was happy for the boys, really stoked for them, and watching it on TV. I mean, I even think we got pipped for the gold medal in that game against Cuba. We really did get screwed by the umpires in that. But, yeah, I just... I'm not saying we're going to go out and win a medal, but I'd love to have an opportunity to try and help us out to do it. Because the Olympics is not going to be like the WBC. It's going to be, we're going to have a real shot against anyone. Because we're not going to have to face the superstars of the MLB in that. You can't take those guys because they're in the middle of their season and it's meant to be amateur. So Japan and Korea will be the two toughest teams. And Cuba.
So, yeah, there's every chance.
Yeah, Cuba's always tough, but like we can beat any team in any day. Like, not to say if we were to play 10 games against Japan that we would win half of them, but I reckon we'd be in most of the games and we'd probably win a couple of them. So, you know, I think we're strong enough to win three or four out of 10, you know, not going to put us at 50-50 with them. But, yeah, I think once, if we got to do that, though, I think the boys would get mad confidence against them. And, you know, because it is a little intimidating, I can imagine, for some of the guys that are, you know, on our team that haven't played at the highest levels. You know, they're still kind of in the A-ball levels. They're playing against major leaguers from Japan that are absolute superstars. They don't quite fathom how big of a superstar they actually are because they're not in America yet. But, yeah, these dudes have been there and done it before, and we're kind of lacking in that department. We have probably the most experience in our Australian team now that we've ever had. For overall.
So I was going to ask you, it's probably a good time to talking about the Aussie team.
Yeah, but
to talk about the importance of the ABL. So do you think it's been really important for the development of the game in Aussie to have a really competitive level for the guys to play at?
Without a doubt. I've noticed big time how much better we've gotten, mainly hitting. Our hitters, our Aussie homegrown hitters, are finally getting quality pitching all summer long to face. And that's been something that I think has been really hard. If you'll notice, like, through the list of guys from Australia that have made it to the big leagues, I don't know the exact percentage, but I think there's only been a handful of hitters, like maybe like 6-7 hitters, maybe, and the rest have been pitchers. And I feel like that mainly is due to, not to say we don't have the talent in hitting, and maybe more than 7, maybe 10. But yeah, most of our mainstays in the big leagues have been pitchers. The guys that have managed to build a career of 3 years or more have been pitchers. You know, obviously with you got Dave Nielsen and, you know, Trent Dorrington was up for a bunch, and Luke Hughes. But I mean, most of the guys, and there's been a couple before that, like Shipley and them, but I'm saying, most of the guys in the recent times have been pitchers that have been able to stay up there. And hitting from Australia, if you want to really make it in America, you've almost got to make the move to America and be there all year round and go play winter ball in other countries, because you weren't going to be able to face anyone that was going to really give you a test. But now with this Australian, the ABL, and it's got better every year I've seen it, the teams are sending their top prospects out here. Because it's a four-game week. They don't have to send their prospect to Dominican or Mexico where they're playing 6 games a week, and the teams will literally play them every at-bat possible and burn them out for the season. So now we get them all sent over here. So there's been a lot of kids, prospects sent over here that have been major leaguers and quite good ones, you know, within a year or two. So, yeah, the league is, I think it's good for the MLB teams that send their guys out, and I think it's great, even better for our Australian players to get, you know, the exposure to these kind of guys. And obviously when teams send their top-ranking guys out, they're going to keep an eye on them, which means their scouts and their guys are going to be able to watch. While they're watching their guy, they're going to see our guys, our young guys that haven't signed yet, and help them get jobs over here. So I think it's a great thing. I really hope it stays strong and gets stronger, because we don't want what happened with the prior league to happen. And, you know, we need this for Australia. And if only we could get the funding help from the government. That'd be nice. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we even are a top 10 sport in Australia, honestly. I mean, I think I could name 10 sports that are ahead of us and that are played. You know, I think more people play field hockey than baseball. I know that could be wrong, but it just feels like you see more of those hockey fields around Melbourne than, or where I'm, you know, grew up, than you saw baseball fields. So, you know, we'll see. I just hope
this might be a good way to help sort of bring more kids into the game as well, I guess.
Yeah, you know, like our basketball team, our Olympic basketball team, has never, you know, we've won the silver medal in the Olympics, yet we don't get a tenth of what they probably get. You know, we have more guys played in the major leagues than they've had play in the NBA, but do we get the funding? No. You know, so I think that's silly. I think that when you prove yourself, you know, why they haven't helped us out at all. And maybe it's the bat and ball sport and it's competing with the number one sport, you know. But I don't know.
It could be the case, yeah. I guess. It's the same over here in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, cricket, I love 2020 Big Bash cricket. That, to me, is the most fun style of cricket to watch, because I know there's an art to, you know, staying alive when your team's out of it and you're just trying to play for the draw, but who wants the draw? It's like kissing your sister. No one wants a draw. Play 5 days to do that? Come on. So, to me, I know there's a skill and an art involved in trying to be able to pull that off. So I'm not knocking the sport in any way. I know it's difficult. I know I wouldn't want to try and stand in there and face a bouncing ball, but that's as hard as that one is. And as you know, but at the same time, I like to be able to get on and off the field in 3 hours and be able to go and have my beer then. You not have to stand out there and burn to a crisp, you know. So it's just a faster-paced game, and I don't know. I hope it really does. I hope it gets a little more love out here in Australia, and maybe it'll never take over cricket. And I just hope that we could possibly get some of the, you know, some of the young boys that start to want to play cricket, maybe they try their hand at baseball, because you could become the best cricket player in the world, or you could just become a standard Major League Baseball player, and I'm going to tell you, you'll end up living with more money in the end playing baseball. you can just be a, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, I guess you will.
You know, these kids don't realise that. You'll be a superstar in your city, or you could be a world superstar, I guess. You know, what do you want more in the stardom way? But, yeah, you'll make more cash in America as a...
So you're back with the Bandits.
Yep.
This year, yeah. So that's your third time with them, right?
No, second. I didn't play last year. I was in Mexico last year. I played the 2000, and I only played the three game, the last 3 weeks of the season 2 years ago, and then the playoffs. And because I was actually out here on my honeymoon, and then to, you know, come back to see my family, and I was up this way and went to a game, and kind of decided, you know, there's a few factors for me to come here. One was that at the time Melbourne, who I normally play for, were in last place, and they didn't have a chance at making the playoffs. They actually eliminated already, and I wanted to make sure that I could be ready for the WBC qualifier. So by playing with a team that had a chance of making the playoffs, I think the Bandits were in third place, I think, when I joined them. But it was very close. It was first and third, maybe we're only a game or two apart. But, I was able to play those 3 weeks and then the playoffs, so that my gap between the ABL season and the WBC qualifier wasn't such a long gap. You know, I was still staying active on the mound. Then I went to Mexico last year, and then I come back this year, and I think I was losing it for baseball a little bit. I weren't having the fun I used to have, and I wanted to kind of spark that again. And the last time I could remember having fun was being a bandit. And so I wanted to come back here and kind of get around the boys again that I'd had. You know, it's just the vibe, and I already feel it. Again, just going to the field here pre-season, though the lads, it just felt like the same kind of camaraderie. Like, I've never left. It's something that really created a very good vibe amongst this team, and I think that they're going to be a quality team that's going to is going to have a chance to win every game they play, no matter who you put under against them. You know, I'd have to say, you know, it'd be silly to not have us as favourites, but I reckon that everyone's kind of banking on Melbourne this year, where they've gone out and done what they've done to bolster their team. But, you know, that's a group they've put together that, I don't know, I think that we got a team that's a family as well, and it's going to be tough to beat. We'll see. Let everyone back them. We don't mind being the underdogs.
Good. I was going to ask you about Melbourne. What about those signings?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's obviously all good to get a big name. You know, a big name like they got from America, obviously, but then a pretty big up and coming Japanese player that's got some big power. They're going to have a tough lineup, you know. And obviously with Hamburger, they're still pitching, coming back. They're not going to be easy to score off for at least one of the games. I don't even know the rest of their squad, but they're looking good. But the pressure is definitely on them because they've got the team now, apparently. So, you know, we can kind of like, even though we're back-to-back champions, we can kind of sit back in the shadows and go about our business while they struggle with, you know, having to perform. And if they don't, it's going to get harder and harder. So, but I don't know. And I tell you, we're not scared of them. That's for sure. I mean, you know, you add one or two bats, that's one thing. But you know, in certain situations, you don't have to pitch to them. You know, and I think we're going to have the lineup. We have a very good lineup. we have a very strong lineup ourselves. We have speed. We have. And our bullpen's flat out nasty. So, not to mention our rotation's pretty good, I think. I don't know. I think we're a very well-rounded team. I think that Mark,
well, you would say that.
Yeah, I think Mark Reedy and the guys, Adrian Lamb, Dingo, they've all kind of come and made this squad very, very competitive. And I heard we've even got, I haven't met him yet, but we've even got like the beast from Taiwan, the big bomb hidden veteran over there that's, I can't remember, he has a nickname, but I haven't met him yet. But, yeah, he's like one of their number one, like, superstar hitters. So we've added him, and in amongst guys like Donald Lutz and Logan Wade, and, oh, mate, we're going to have a fun team to watch too. So I think it's going to be fireworks when we play against them. We're either going to see a big scoring game or nothing. It's either going to be 0-0 going into the ninth, or it's going to be like 10-9. So it's. I'm looking forward to it.
So that's the one to look out for. Then it's going to be Melbourne and Brisbane is going to be the fixture to look out for between now and January.
Well, yeah, but here, you know, I see we're playing them in the third week, so that's kind of cool. You know, we have 2 weeks to get ready for that and maybe find some form. But I think that's what you're going to see at the end in February. So that's when all the marbles are out there on the line, that's when it's going to be.
There you go. That's your prediction. It seems like a good spot to end the conversation with a bold prediction that in February we're going to see Brisbane and Melbourne. So that seems like the right place to end the conversation.
Yeah, I think that's where it's going to be. I mean, I haven't seen the other teams, and obviously there's some good teams out there. Like, they're all quality. I don't know. I just feel like we've got a lot to play for. Melbourne's got a lot to play for. They all do, but I don't know. If I were to be a guessing man, a betting man, I would say that those two are going to be there. But obviously, we have to go out and take care of business, just like they do. So I'm not going to go out there and say it's going to happen, but I'll say that if I were to bet on it, I would bet on that. But there's no betting in baseball, so I won't do it.
Yeah, you better not. I hear they come down hard on guys who bet.
Oh yeah, mate. You might as well. You're better off doing steroids than betting. You only get 50 game suspension for steroids. You get lifetime ban if you bet.
I think that's a. Yeah, well, on that bombshell, I think it's a good spot to end the conversation. Travis, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this evening. So thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, no worries, mate. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.